Gopal Champu, Chapter 21, Stealing the Young Gopi's Clothing. Snigdhakanta again spoke the same evening to the Sakis. After Garga performed the samskaras for Krishna and Balaram, thus delineating their status, many young girls, being very fortunate, were born in Braj in various families, and by their nature developed desires for Krishna alone from the time that they were small children, Kumara. This should be described. When they had developed an inclination that Krishna would be their husband, they were ignorant of a method. The gopis, having beauty like the moon, grew thin like the waning moon because of their inclination to Krishna and because of their great sorrow. When alone, they would pray to various devatas for attaining Krishna. They wandered about with no aim. They prayed, "May we live in the house of Nanda and Yashoda, and may they be our father-in-law and mother-in-law. May Krishna be our husband, birth after birth." One day, the young girls met together and went to the bank of the Yamuna. This was suitable. Though many students study under one guru, their goal is one, and they gather at one place. The girls of various births, being friends, gather together in one place with the same goal. When they gathered together, their sentiments became one. Though born in various places, they all had affection for Krishna, just as when thick clouds gather together, there is rain. Though sometimes they were unfriendly to each other, now they showed great friendship because, though they hid in their hearts when among the elders, they revealed their hearts to each other. How could they hide their hearts when they met together? When they revealed their hearts to each other, tears flowed from their eyes and their bodies fainted. Observing them and desiring their happiness, Vrinda approached them wearing the cloth of a mendicant. Earlier, Vrinda had thought, "All these young girls have attraction to meet Krishna, but they cannot express this. Attraction arises from conventional affection and becomes strong when it awakens. They should worship a devata and not worship him." She was welcomed and blessed them. After the formality, she began to speak. "O young girls, I live in this forest. Seeing your attraction for Krishna, I have come with heart laden with compassion. I have a method for achieving your goals. Please hear about it. You can accomplish this without great endeavor, but you must practice with a little endeavor for 1 month. I have mastered that compassionate, magical method endowed with mantras." Just as one places the nitty gem in a particular place, Vrinda placed the mantra in the ears of the girls, taught them the method of worship, and feeling satisfied within, disappeared. Attached to her teachings, the girls became absorbed in the highest bliss. The greatest of profuse raga assisted all of them constantly, and they had attained a method for fulfilling their desires. Thus they experienced pure bliss. The supreme Vaishnavi Shakti, most worshipable, was their guru for anuraga. The best of mantras would fulfill their desires. What other happiness could they desire? The young girls began the vow on the first day of the Agrahayana month with a sankalpa. Leaving their houses together 4 dandas before sunrise, they went to the bank of the Yamuna while holding hands and singing. While going, they joked and revealed their intentions. "O friend, the form of all auspiciousness, wearing a garland and endowed with the best qualities, will marry you. Nanda, pleased with this, is spreading the joyful news. On hearing the news, your mother and father become joyful and distribute wealth. Hiding his joy within, Krishna will make you angry with joking words sent through friends. After the matchmaker decides the auspicious day, Krishna will don a new cloth for his wedding. His dark complexion mixing with the gold color of his cloth is like the cloud with lightning bolts, the basis of all beauty. He has a yellow vest which sparkles with various colors. He wears a crown, head ornaments, and turban, and has jewels in his locks of hair. He wears tilak. Earrings decorate his cheeks. His lips become reddened with betel stains, and he covers his lips with a cloth held in his hand. He has a necklace in his throat. He has armlets, bracelets, and rings on his fingers and a colored thread on his wrist. On his heart are a necklace and the kostuba. He wears many garlands. He has a shining belt with jewels on his waist and ornaments on his feet. No one has ever seen such remarkable dressing. He is the ornament for all those ornaments and limbs. Such pride is acceptable. The people watched him arrive on a jeweled cart surrounded by friends. They shower him with flowers while he sits on the cart and they sing songs. He is pleased with the sound of the cart and hundreds of instruments. O friend, on hearing the tumultuous sounds of the marriage, your heart will become agitated. O friend, when he arrives at your door, you faint in bliss. O friend, your relatives will approach the groom and women with red lips will sing. The instrumentalists will approach the groom and songs will be loud. The women will approach and perform arti and sprinkle flowers. O beautiful girl, when Krishna comes to the pavilion, your happiness will increase. Beautiful girl, after Nanda and the others have been worshipped, there'll be much joking. Having followed the preliminary rules, they will bring you to Krishna along with many gems. They will bring you, whose limbs are weak because of love, in front of him. Your father will take your weak hand and join it with Krishna's hand using water. Beautiful face girl, no one will understand your great happiness. What more can I say? I see that he's accepted your attractive hand. Coming to the Yamuna, quickly finishing their songs, they shed their garments on the bank of the river in the early morning with childish flurry and, coming together, submerged themselves in the water. Because they wore silk, that cloth was not rejected, even though it was not washed again. They put on the cloth, made a worshipable deity of Katyayani out of sand, chanted mantras, and returned to their homes. For 1 month they performed this vow. On the last day when the vow was to be completed, in great bliss they went to the bank of the Yamuna and played in the water for a few moments without bashfulness, since the place was isolated and far off from habitation. Understanding what they were doing for a month, Krishna took four young boys with him and went there secretly, watching them while offering his heart to them. The wise understand that Dhamma, Sudama, Vasudama, and Kinkani are the external manifestations of Krishna's mind, intelligence, chitta, and ahankara. When they turned 5 years old, they received a shower of prema from Krishna every day and became joyful in association of others their same age. They went along with him, asking, "Where are you going?" Clever Krishna, taking company of the four boys, arrived at the Yamuna and signaled to them to stop laughing with a gesture of his hand. Bending down while the girls could not see, he stole their clothing. Taking the clothes, he quickly climbed up in the kadamba tree and began laughing along with the boys. Hearing the laughing, the young girls all together looked up in fear. Hearing the deep-throated laugh, whose supreme excellence was appreciated by others around him, the girls glanced at each other. Not seeing their clothing, where they left it, they submerged their bodies in the water up to their necks, appearing like lotuses. The faces of the girls could not be mistaken for lotuses, since they derided the forest of lotuses, for no lotus blossomed in the winter season. The girls remained with downcast eyes for some time in the water. They then glanced at the kadamba tree when the chill became intense. Previously, Krishna hid himself behind the branches, but now he made himself visible. Krishna's glance at the faces of the girls with their bodies submerged in water was like a bee within a lotus. The girls gazed at Krishna, just as a Jataka bird gazes at a cloud. The young boys laughed loudly, and the young girls became angry. The boy said, "Stealing your clothes will become respected in Braj." With Krishna giving them constant instructions, the young boys spoke. First they said, "We do not know at all whether our action is permissible or not, but we came to teach you since we have understood our lessons." Looking at each other with shame, the girls said, "You have learned well from some teacher. Please practice teaching in Braj to gain the respect of your teacher." Again the boys, on being instructed by Krishna, spoke, "We do not know why you are scolding us. You are aquatic beings, and we reside in the trees." The girls said, "One should criticize the acts of you thieves sitting on the edges of the tree branches. Since our clothes have been stolen, we are suffering from being submerged in the water." Then Krishna himself spoke with feigned anger and astonishment. "What did we steal from you?" The girls said, "Ah, we are many. Why are you trying to hide our clothing, Ambara, with great difficulty?" Krishna said, "You are certainly covered by the sky, Ambara. Why are you saying that I have stolen the sky?" They said, "O Damodar, you have the power to make cloth, Ambara, become sky, Ambara. How much bravery will you gain by stealing in this isolated place?" Krishna spoke in a gentle voice, "These girls are not naked, but are covered with water. I am laughing at that. You can see that they have bad character and are gentle in behavior only superficially. These poverty-stricken girls are unlawfully eyeing our clothing that we have thrown about while playing. They cover themselves in water while thinking which piece of cloth is most suitable for them, while desiring a private place far from our eyes to put on that cloth. You can clearly see their golden cloth in the clear water of the Yamuna, which clings to the various limbs of their bodies, appearing like groups of letters. Go quickly to the water and take the girls out by grabbing their hands." Understanding his order, the boys went to the bank and stood waiting for a moment out of respect. The girls addressed the boys, "Why are you standing there stunned? Come close without fear." The girls spoke to their friends, "Oh friends, bring these thieves into the water and dunk them." They spoke to the boys, "We can pull the person who taught you how to steal women's belts and clothing into the water by the mercy of Kachiyani, what to speak of pulling you in." Hearing this, the boys stumbled back to the kadamba tree and quickly climbed up. Laughing, Krishna addressed them clearly, "Ah, you are playing in this place like auspicious women. Let your pride remain. I see that the devatas are merciful to you. As long as you remain living in the water, we are determined to stay on top of this tree, living in the air." Understanding his words, the girls revealed their minds using puns. "One who remains in a boat, or tree, has no fear of the river. Why ask about the river to persons who have offered their bodies into the river?" Smiling, he began to speak compassionately to the girls who were shivering from seeing his face and from the cold waves. "Oh, rare girls, your joints are becoming loose because of the cold. Please come here." Frowning, they said, "Why are you asking us to come?" Krishna said, "Please come and take the cloths which were stolen by a forest spirit and taken from her by me." They said, "What more do we need to look for?" Saying this, they stretched out their hands and advanced slightly. Krishna then said, while pointing his finger, "Oh, lotus-eyed girls, come here, close to me." They said, "Why are you telling us to come here?" Krishna said, "My glance has become extraordinary." They said, "What does that mean?" Krishna said, "You cannot change clothing during an eclipse. They said to each other, "O fools, he is speaking in order to cheat us." Biting his tongue, Krishna then spoke while showing the cloth, "I speak the truth, it is not a lie." Suspecting some obstacle, the girls spoke amongst themselves, "O fools, this is one of his jokes, he is laughing heartily within himself." Hiding his smile, he spoke sweet words, "This is not a joke. You have become thin because of your vows to Kachyani. You are so pitiful. You should not suffer." They said, "Someone who takes others' clothing because of lust and then acts compassionate to them when they are cold shows himself to be most absurd." "Let that be. Speak truthfully. When did you begin speaking the truth?" Krishna said, "I never speak lies." They said, "Who said that?" Krishna spoke with a smile, "Ah, proud girls, if you make incorrect conclusions about me, then please ask these most righteous people gathered here." They said while smiling, "True, they seem to know your intentions and are righteous." Krishna said, "Oh, girls with thin waists, if you think my words are not true, then see with your eyes. You can all come, or one among you can come forward." Then, seeing how Krishna was joking with them, the gopis became fully immersed in love for him, and they glanced at each other, and they began to laugh and joke among themselves, even in their embarrassment. But still, they did not come out of the water. They were embarrassed to go to the shore and were freezing cold in the water. Thus, all remained there stunned. They spoke a little. "You are the jewel of Nanda, the object of affection for the people and are respected by them. We are becoming disturbed in heart because of the extreme cold. Please give us our clothing. Give us our clothing. Do not act improperly." Krishna said, "I have seen some crafty person here. Since you are from good families, I must help you who are defenseless, since the forest spirit has stolen your clothing. Therefore I am acting like this. We do not have any interest in your lowly clothing. If you give something to satisfy us with joy, we will remove the obstacle caused by the forest spirit." Hearing this, the girls who were engaged in worshipping Kachyani began to reflect, "Ah, he is trying to make us reveal the exact intentions in our minds. This is the right time to reveal the attraction in our minds. But we should be careful of deceit. That seems natural, since we are now freezing and frightened." They said to him, "Oh, we are freezing from the icy wind and are about to die. You should not joke with us using torturous words. Give us our clothes. We will accept the bad name that you wish to give us." Smiling, he said, "Oh, if you give what I want, I will accept obedience to you." They began to think, "Oh, he has become expert at affecting our hearts. Anyway, we must go along with his jokes and serve him." They then spoke clearly, "O Shyamasundara, we are your servants." Krishna spoke with a smile, "Please do as I previously stated." Looking at each other with darting eyes, they spoke, "All right, we will do as you have said." Though filled with eagerness, Krishna remained silent. Then they spoke again, "O knower of Dharma, give us our clothing. Since you break your promises elsewhere, you should not pronounce Dharma while causing mortal wounds." When Krishna remained silent, hiding an amused smile, they again spoke, "If you do not do this, we will tell the king." They spoke in this way to cause fear in him, though he was without fear. They did not mean it. The intention of their statement was to make him understand the word king. Krishna replied suitably, "Ah, when will you be my servants? When will you follow my words? I have not realized that yet. If this topic is true, without alternatives, rise from the water, bringing with you all treasures, and come here as a group with smiles, not with even a little rudeness. If you do not do this, why should we help young girls who have made false vows and introduced a dharma?" Seeing that they did not come out of the water, he then spoke harsh words, "I do not seek a relationship with you girls who are useless, hopeless, and vulgar. But you should understand that I am quite merciful to you. Otherwise, I would not give you the cloth. What can an angry king do?" He had mentioned the word king deceitfully. Then in silence and in fear they began to trust the words of Krishna, the crest jewel of civility and compassion. Still, they did not completely trust him. However, though their bodies could not move because of shame, they rose from the water in order to get relief from the pain of the cold because their limbs were becoming numb. This is how the wise describe the situation. Although they acted this way because of the cold, there is also another reason. If our desires are fulfilled, we will maintain our bodies. Otherwise, we will give up our bodies. This much we agree on. If the agreement is not met, even then, what is the use of our shame, since we will die? Going to him without clothing, we can use the pretext of the cold. Somehow they came out of the water, but they did not reveal themselves completely. They placed their delicate hands in front of them, acting as their lower clothing, and by spreading their hair, they obtained an upper covering. Placing infant girls in front of them, they approached Krishna with their bodies contracted like hunchbacks. The young boys then laughed loudly amongst themselves, saying, "Look, Krishna, these young girls, completely frightened, are coming here after throwing their clothing in the water." Krishna, however, being contemplative, showed great mercy. Though women endowed with all good qualities are compared to the moon, these young girls surpassed that comparison since they were without blemish. How astonishing! These girls from good families desire to give up their bodies. They cannot give up their shame. They have approached me in this condition. It is good that they worry about displeasing me. Their eagerness has made them give up reservations, and they look to me in their condition of suffering. My heart desires to make clear jokes which fulfill my desires and point out their faults in order to remove their shyness. Though they have come, they are fully inhibited and remain there covering their limbs. He then spoke out loud, "Ah, you are fickle boys. Why are you laughing? These girls are without clothes. Can they be criticized in a naked state?" Taking the cloth from the branch of the Kadamba tree and showing it to them, he spoke with a smile in order to express his love. "I will give you the cloth when you decide to become my servants. Previously, it was difficult to decide, but seeing the situation now, it is clear. You have learned about conducting worship from a genuine guru, but I have become pale on seeing your bad conduct. You should understand that by entering the river naked, you have offended the deity of the water. In order to nullify this fault, you must place your hands on your heads and offer respects to the deity." The girls felt shame in their hearts. They were overcome with intense fear. They understood that they must obey his order. "It is improper that these boys see our private parts, but there is no harm in showing them to a husband who is like a devata." Thus, they diverted the boys by saying, "Look, someone is making sound over there." In a joking manner, they offered respects to Krishna. "O Master, we offer respects to you." Seeing their limbs with interest and eagerness, considering their tenderness and beauty, he became satisfied. He gave them their clothing with a laugh. "Because of seeing you, I have easily attained you as my wives. How else can I offer myself to you?" Having satisfied them, he showed his own cleverness. Unfavorable speech produced out of friendship produces compliance and joy. See, by stealing their clothes, he gave them great bliss. When Krishna came down from the tree to hide their shame, the girls put on their clothing with even greater embarrassment. Clear rati manifested in them and spread throughout their limbs. Their lotus faces began to blossom slightly on attaining Krishna. Their glances fell upon him. Ah, the moment of love is crooked. Krishna came to give them a gift, but he forgot everything on smelling the fragrance from their lotus faces with his nose. As bees surround lotuses filled with honey, the young girls remained around him, accepting him as their husband. The girls then said, "Let us go. What else should we do here?" Taking the clothing and ornaments in their hands, they felt bliss. Krishna, attractive because of stealing the clothing, looked for the gift he was to give. Thereafter, understanding that the girls undergoing penance desired to touch his hand, he decided to fulfill that desire. If one worships someone else for one's own benefit, it is worship for the self. One who is absorbed in me but shows disrespect externally gives me pain. I am the first type of person. You are the second type. I consider your unconditional vow to be the highest truth. In desiring me, you have no other desire, just as grains fried in ghee and then fermented in sugar dissolve. Worshipping me, you worship no other object. There is only taste for me. Thus, what more can I say about you? When the best of the women heard this, when he hinted that they should marry according to Gandharva rites, their eyes showed embarrassment and they waited for the time of acceptance. Increasing his powers for accepting them in marriage, he again spoke pure words to them. Mutual acceptance of the bride and groom is the method of Gandharva marriage. Mutual acceptance is the highest dharma and manifests naturally between a couple. Having reached success by the Gandharva method of marriage, please return to Braj. On a night very soon we will meet. When he promised them this, their devotion increased further. Shukadeva has said, thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the young girls, their desire now fulfilled, could bring themselves only with great difficulty to return to the village of Braj, meditating all the while upon his lotus feet. When the girls bowed to him in shyness, their eyes experienced first his eyes, then his red lips, then his arms, then his waist, hips, thighs, knees, and lotus feet. When they separated from him and returned to Braj, they saw those limbs within their hearts continually. Krishna stole their cloth and their hearts, and only returned their cloth. He did not return their hearts, but hid them. The last day of the worship and vows had passed. Joyful on attaining Krishna as their husband, they forgot the worship and returned to Braj. All their actions were filled with the happiness of attaining him. They had obtained the happiness of Krishna accepting to be their husband as the result of their prema. For which reason they had worshipped Katyayani. What more could be attained after this? Madhukanta said, why did Katyayani, who ate the sweets offered during that month, not come to bestow the desired result? Snigdhakanta said, the anuraga of the girls was capable of bestowing the best results. Our worship does not give such results. Katyayani did not come to bestow benedictions, but Krishna, the object of their anurag, came personally. Then Madhukanta said, then Garga kept these young girls especially separated from Krishna. Snigdhakanta said, he did so, but not directly. Madhukanta said, how is that? Snigdhakanta said, Krishna was not eager to come back to Braj to see Radha and the other women of Braj, best of chaste women, who were suffering from being married to men. And the vows of taking the sacred thread in weddings could not be conducted without bringing Garga again. Since Nanda and Yashoda accepted Garga's proposal, Radha and the other women were no longer available to him. Because his mind was disturbed by this, he kept apart from the young girls at that time. Madhukanta said, how did the young girls carry on after that? Snigdhakanta said, externally they were still young, but because they married Krishna they were no longer young girls. Madhukanta said, that is true. Their present state was opposite to their previous childish condition. They remained separated from Krishna because of his consciousness was predominated by Radha and others. After elaborating on this subject, the reciter addressed Radha. When Krishna delayed, the strength of love became stronger because of the lack of meeting with you. As previously, Krishna again began playing his flute. Shukadeva Guru of Parikshit has recited a verse which is pertinent to this pastime, though it belongs to the description of the Rasa Leela. The words of the gopis are filled with ras. O Lord of love and beauty, your glance excels the whirl of the finest, most perfectly formed lotus within the autumn pond. O bestower of benedictions, you are killing these maidservants who have given themselves to you freely without any price. Isn't this murder? O lotus-eyed one, The goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable to even stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you." Thus they made a request in misery at the beginning of the evening of the Rasa dance. The Aborigine women of the Vrindavan area become disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkuma powder, endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet. This powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds, and when the Aborigine women smear it on their faces and breasts, they feel fully satisfied and give up all their anxiety. This description indicates the influence of the flute which was previously described. That second contact cannot be simply a special experience arising from meeting with Krishna, since Krishna could not at all refuse them on the night of the Rasa dance. At the beginning of the Rasa dance, it is said, Krishna also thought of enjoying. He did not feel complete without them. The women had said, "O lotus-eyed one, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable to even stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you." The meaning is, after you have touched us, you have endowed us completely with Rati, Bhava. Then the following is described. After Krishna played his flute in the evening, though the long dull nights of the Hemanta and the Shishira seasons, springtime finally arrived. Though spring is known as the best season, in Vrindavan it reached its topmost state. When summer becomes like spring, what can we say of the attractiveness of the actual spring? The wise know that Krishna resides in Vrindavan at that time eternally. Hemanta and Shishira seasons brought both Krishna and the women distress and pain. Spring, which precedes the summer, also gave them remarkable pain. All the women thought as follows. "O friend, when spring comes, I will blaspheme the bad conduct of all the seasons. What can we say about our real desire? Spring previously entered and afflicted us with the sound of the cuckoos and bees. What insolence! The bee is a fool and the cuckoo is a slave. We see the bee and cuckoo as commanders in chief of spring. What woman can spend her time in happiness? The flowers make us think of his sweet smiling face, and the lotuses remind us of his eyes. The cuckoos remind of his playing the fifth note, and the bees remind us of his kiss. Where's the means? From where will the means arise? What means do we have to attain him? The world is now covered with the symptoms of spring. We do not approve of spring, because it does not act properly. But where can we flee? The spring is pulling us towards Krishna. The bees are like the fire of smoke and the wind is sharp. The gentle touch of the palasha flower gives pain. The cuckoos fly about like firebrands. The flowers with their pollen are like ashes. It is not astonishing that we are burning. The cloud of Krishna alone can deliver us." Krishna went through the same experience. It is apparent that the spring does not bring a meeting with the gopis. Then spring, which shoots flower arrows, is certainly unjust. Who can tolerate this? Radha and Krishna both thought. In the month of Madhava, spring, the constellation Vishakha is worthy of worship for bringing a meeting with Krishna, or it produces love for Krishna. It reveals Yogamaya in order that the meeting is fulfilled. Krishna produces all happiness and removes all sorrow. In order to meet Radha, Krishna reveals Yogamaya. The agitation of all the women. Because of the separation, which is like a sacrifice for the women, the sweet chirping of birds becomes a mantra uttered to light the fire. A parrot taught by Vrinda came and began speaking in front of Krishna. "O hero Braj, Radha and the other gopis in great pain and their agitation are tolerating the heat coming from the moon and drinking poison arising from the wind." Vrinda showed Krishna a message written on the Champaka creeper by Radha. "In Vrindavan, you are a tamal tree, and I am the Champaka creeper. Vrinda alone can arrange our meeting, since we by ourselves are without motion. No one else can do this." Looking at this message with his eyes repeatedly, Krishna then began contemplating with longing. Oh, I always go to Bhadra and Padma, and today I cannot go to the auspicious lotus Radha. Although I have obtained the sweet beauty of Shyamala, I have been separated from Radha who has desire for me. Though I have conquered a host of moons by my nails, Chandravali, I desire Radha who is similar to Chandravali. Ah, though this is so, though I have attained skillful Vishakha, I have not attained Radha with Lalita and Vishakha. Therefore, I am very unhappy. Radha's letter is the height of skillful intelligence. Detached from everything on the full moon night of this Vishakha month, Krishna thought, I have become extraordinary by perfect teachings. Entering an insurpassable forest, he began to play his flute. Decreasing the self-control of the gopis by the playful sound of the flute, he agitated Radha and the other gopis. Giving them pain, he attracted them. Radha would also come, since she was also a woman. Radha, however, remained for several praharas motionless like a picture, unaware that Krishna was attracting the other gopis. Previously, when the animals were attracted to the flute, the gopis realized this. The gopis then entered Vrindavan, praiseworthy because Krishna had entered it. For the eyes it was shining like a sapphire, for the skin it was spread with water droplets from the Yamuna, from the nose it was fragrant with musk particles. Then the women came from all directions to that forest, alone or in groups of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8. Their numbers could not be measured. Gazing at that beautiful face from whose flute emanated an attractive spell, losing their awareness, they became merged in happiness. Following his command, they hid their shyness arising from directly meeting him and touching his feet, and he remained within his vision. Though they did not reveal any affection in front of him, their condition communicated their extraordinary love. He gazed at the gopis who stood there, revealing their condition to him, and for a moment became absorbed in their beauty. All the women except Radha, the object of his intention, had gathered in the isolated grove. They did not make any special gestures. Though they did not want to return, he sent them home since he would satisfy them in the future, while indicating respectfully that he supported the cause of their accepting him. He explained as follows, "By my nature I play the flute. Because of this you have gathered here. I think if other people come here also on hearing the flute, you should not remain." His conciliation, "Leave this place immediately and return to Braj. Do not mistrust me. Do I not know the affection you have for me? O Pranasakis, if I do not know your love, at least immediately accept me as the one who can fulfill your desires." Their reaction, their pitiful eyes were not satisfied, and their ears, though hearing, were not satisfied. Their noses, though swooning, were not satisfied. Their minds, though offered to him, were not satisfied. Thus they sang, "O lotus-eyed one, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable to even stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you." When Radha remained in difficulty, unconscious for 2 praharas, her friends found all methods to revive her hopeless. Purnamasi came quickly with Brinda. Understanding her mental anguish, she spoke clearly. "If you leave Radha alone in my thatched hut for 1 prahara, I will make endeavors to revive her." When they all agreed, Radha was brought to the cottage. Purnamasi, overcome with trembling, had Madhumango bring Krishna. When he arrived, she welcomed him with seat and other items and then scolded him with a slight smile. "Let that be. Whatever you have done, let that be. Now please tell us what to do." Krishna spoke with embarrassment. "Oh, what has happened? What should we do?" Purnamasi said, "We are suffering but have no means of reviving her. By the touch of your body, remove her swoon." Krishna said, "Who? Her?" Madhumangal then spoke, having anger mixed with affection. "If the cloud does not know the lightning which resides within it, lightning becomes slightly manifest. But can the lightning hide forever? If Krishna does not recognize Radha, who is fickle within because of her attraction to him, she will not reveal herself fully. But can she hide her feelings forever? Smiling sweetly, Purnamasi, looking at Madhumangal's face, then looked at Krishna's face. Krishna said, "Madhumangal is unsteady because of a disturbance in his life affairs. Let him prattle as much as he likes. The lies of an uncultured fool are mere effort. I should not disobey your order, but please do what is suitable." Brinda said, "Radha is endowed with the essence of all beauty of Gokula's people under its protectors. What is the harm if Radha becomes conscious on experiencing your touch?" Oh, Krishna, if you are indifferent to Radha, be indifferent. My heart has hardened. What more can I say to you?" Thinking a moment, she spoke again. "Radha surpasses Lakshmi in beauty. If you reject her, you cannot be called the person who has Lakshmi on his chest. Being gentle, we cannot obstruct the meeting between you and Radha." Krishna remained silent. Purnamasi said, "O life of the people abroad, you are silent. Why do you not accept my words?" Krishna said, "I am silent because I will be afflicted with adharma." Purnamasi said, "I know everything. I have accepted adharma, but you should increase dharma." Krishna said, "Please advise something other than touching her." Brinda said, "Show yourself to her. You are endowed with all good qualities. By showing yourself, our actions are complete. Why should we pray for anything else?" Krishna began to think, "O beloved, because I disrespect you, my body, senses, mind, intelligence, and prana have all become useless." Krishna thought about Radha in this way. Though full of longing, he remained silent externally. Madhumangal took his hand and led him to a bower in the cottage. He placed Brinda there and went outside. He had Purnamasi go elsewhere. He looked at the events from nearby as an instructor while remaining motionless. Brinda said, "O Krishna, show your beautiful face. The moon mistakes your face for a second moon. The mirror thinks your face is a second mirror, receiving its reflection. Lakshmi becomes bewildered, thinking your face is more beautiful than hers. His hair stood on end and tears came to his eyes continually. He looked at her face. The Sakis sing of this even today. Radha, having come to a solitary place, was resting on a bed of new shoots to gain relief from her fire of separation. Krishna looked at Radha, who had become pale because of the sound of his flute. Tears streamed constantly from his face. She made his moonstone face liquid by the sweet beauty of his face. Worship that body filled with the fire of separation, whose heart is centered on you. That body appears to be like the external reflection of its heart. That body is affected by Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. The wise offer kumkum to that body as a remedy. Seeing the kumkum, Krishna considered that her internal love had surfaced externally. Seeing her, he manifested sattvika bhavas and transformations in his heart. Though he applied the remedy, he considered that it was only a semblance of Radha. He was thinking that a clumsy magician nearby, testing his emotions for Radha, had produced a false form. But desiring her, he then thought that the false form was actually Radha. Then, full of anxiety because of grief, he responded to Brinda's request. Out of grief for Radha, he accepted Brinda's contrived request to see Radha, who in her heart held his lotus feet, the cause of her life. Seeing the unavoidable symptoms in Krishna and Radha, she prayed for the desired goal. "O Prince of Braj, she has the highest prema for you. O Krishna, Radha, the form of Ras, exists during the period of your youth. Intuiting your desire for enjoyment, filled with grief and accepting your grief, she constantly gives up her own happiness. Knowing this, you play the flute for her. Please hear with attention." In a choked voice, Krishna said, "What should I do?" Vrinda said, "Put your hand on her heart." Krishna said, "That is most improper." Vrinda said, "Then put your feet on her heart." Krishna remained silent. Vrinda fell at his feet. "Oh, do not delay." In great grief, she grabbed a foot or hand by force and placed it on Radha's heart. Trembling to the extreme, he placed his lotus foot on her heart and lost his self-control. Opening her eyes and being touched by the portion of his foot, as if touched by the leaf of a life-restoring plant, she saw Krishna. At that time, the eyes of Radha and Krishna reflected the image of each other. Because of their beauty, their greed increased. They both desired to exchange eyes to relish the other's beauty. Krishna became shy in front of Brinda. Covering his head with a cloth, he quickly exited, offering respects to Purnamasi and departed. However, he stumbled as he walked. Taking support of Madhu Mangal with joking gestures, he met his friends. As if seeing a dream with no control, Radha got up and began softly, inaudibly crying. When Brinda carefully consoled her, she slightly recovered and offered respects to Purnamasi. That afternoon, after Krishna had come and seen her, she returned to Braj with her friends and Brinda and somehow passed some time. This mutual touching was for the purpose of merely touching, not enjoyment. For once having experienced that happiness, how could Radha stop her increased grief when separated for a moment from that happiness? She kept that happiness within herself and not telling others. Which poet can even slightly describe the joyful condition of Radha and Krishna when they met? The Pulinda women spread the kumkuma that fell from Radha and Krishna on their bodies. When the Pulinda women decorated themselves with the kumkuma on the grass from Krishna's lotus feet, these fortunate persons are described as follows to show their amazing realization. The Aborigine women of the Vrindavan area became disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder, endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet. This powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds, and when the Aborigine women smear it on their faces and breasts, they feel fully satisfied and give up all their anxiety. This is indicated here also. Enough of speaking about dearest Radha, the kumkum from whose breast became most attractive when it stained the grass, since it had also directly touched Krishna's feet. The good fortune of the Pulinda women who achieved success from the bliss of smearing on their limbs that kumkum is far beyond our fortune. The speaker then concluded, O Radha, you have obtained a lover who previously expressed many desires to attain you, while shaking with agitation like a moving chariot.